So 4 years ago, we had a one-year-old and a three-year-old, and they're in the front row, so they're still fun to have around. And so we had had two children in 3 years, and we were a little bit over a year into planting and starting a new church in Lowell. And so my wife and I were at this place in our relationship where we were both as individuals and as a couple, just exhausted and tired in a way that you're like, you're just exhausted to the bone and to the soul. And it, you know, in every like sort of relationship, but especially in marriage, like, there's different parts to it. There's like commitment, and there's, you know, friendship, and there's passion. And we were in this season that was like all commitment. It was just like, hey, we're committed to this thing. We're gonna like, we're gonna stick this thing out. It's gonna be great. And so we did this thing that is unexpected, that you wouldn't normally think of when you have so much going on and there's so many people who need you regularly. We went to an all-inclusive vacation without children, and it was the greatest decision of my life. That's a picture of the place we went to. And it was awesome. It was beautiful. It was life-giving. I was like, oh my goodness, I now remember why I like you. And she's like, yes, I feel the exact same way, right? It's because, like, we had just come through this season where we were exhausted, we were tired, we'd been pouring out and pouring out and pouring out, and we just needed some time to be us and to be us together. You know, a friend of mine, recently, a couple years ago, actually, she has five kids, and her youngest moved out and went off to college, which means that she raised five kids, did a great job with five kids, invested in five kids, and the fifth is now gone, and they're, yay, you loaded up in the college, good, I'll call you, let me know how things are going. Back to the house, empty, quiet, tumbleweeds rolling through, right? And she had been terrified of this moment for months, if not years. Like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do when they're all gone, right? And this transition happens. And she was afraid of this moment, and she was leery of it, and the transition of it, and the loss of it. And it happened, and she felt like it was the best thing, that like, it was so great, because she got to hang out with her friends more. Like, people didn't need her as much. She got to spend more time with Jesus and prayer and reading the Bible, and she got to pick up on hobbies again. And she was like, oh my goodness, it was so great. And then these super great people who she raised would come back and visit sometimes, but then leave again. And the whole thing, it was like this thing that was like sad, and she was grieving it, and she was in mourning, and she felt grief around it. And then it happened, and it became joy. You know, when I was 16, I saw the ocean for the first time. It's true. I'd never seen the ocean before. And I was invited to go on vacation with a friend of mine in high school named Brandon and his family. So his parents, and then me and Brandon, and then his younger siblings in the back. And we're like driving to South Carolina. And we got off the highway, and I rolled my window down, and I smelled a smell of air that I had never smelled before. The air smelled salty and sweet. And I could just tell, like, I had never smelled anything like this before. And I didn't know what it was, but the smell was intoxicating. And then as we're driving down the road, like, because beachfront properties are so close together because they're trying to maximize space, there's like an 8-foot window between these two houses on the beach. But after driving down the road, between these two houses, for like a tenth of a second, I just like see through these two houses, the ocean, past the beach. And I knew in that moment, I was going to love that place forever. Like, deep to my soul, I love the ocean. Why? Because for 16 years, I didn't know what I was missing. I'm the fifth out of seven. And so by that point, like, you know, vacations became prohibitively expensive. My family didn't travel that much. I grew up in Indiana, not a lot of oceans around Indiana, right? But people still choose to live there for some reason. And so I saw the ocean for the first time. And because I didn't know what I was missing, but suddenly, I was grieving what I didn't even know I was grieving when I was grieving it. But now that grief had turned to joy. It wasn't like the grief ended and the joy then started. It was like this became this. A couple weeks ago, I was hanging drywall all day long. I got up, I ate breakfast, I was working. We're trying to finish this porch. You know, I want this porch to be like this reading area for my wife. It's this beautiful little area. Because later on, I want to work on a man cave for me. So it's like porch for my wife and then man cave for me. And, first things first. And so I'm home all day long. And normally if I'm home, like I am engaging with my lovely daughters who are over here. I'm playing with them. We're playing hide and seek. We're wrestling, whatever. You know, they're asking mommy and she says no to stuff. They come ask daddy and he says yes to stuff. And that's how our lives normally go. But this one day I was busy hanging drywall like all day long. And so I go through the day. It's like 7 p.m., and I'm exhausted and I'm tired, but it hits me. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like they're like an hour and a half max from going to bed. And I haven't engaged with them and loved on them at all today. So I ran upstairs, like got a shower real fast, like washed the drywall dust off. And then I came downstairs and it was like, let's just like appreciate one. That's like, you know, tickles and giggles and ice cream and just, you know, coloring and hide and seek, and just all of that as intensely as possible because we've spent all day not doing that. Because we've gone through this thing where it's like, oh man, I felt bad. Like I missed that. I missed those experiences. Let's have as much of them as we possibly can. It's because I missed it. I was grieving it. I had grief over what I hadn't been doing with my time. Because that thing which oftentimes causes us grief is the source of our grief, can become the source of our greatest joy. That in your life, which has become one of the sources of your greatest grief, can become one of the sources of your greatest joy. And this isn't me saying that. Jesus promises this in John chapter 16. Like he says that your grief will become joy. We've been in a series now called The Nine Faces of Jesus. And in this series, we're looking at these stories of Jesus and trying to find ourselves as Jesus in the stories. As in when you read a story of Jesus, or you hear a story of Jesus, and he comes up to a blind man and Jesus heals the blind man, you're like, oh wow, like that's like me. Like I'm blind. I didn't see the life for how it truly was. And Jesus came and healed me and now I can see. Right? That's how we always read the stories of Jesus. But so often in the Bible, what it says is be like Jesus, move like Jesus, speak like Jesus, love like Jesus. Even in John chapter, 1 John chapter 4, verse 17, it says, as he is, present tense, how Jesus is now. It says, so are we in this world. He's saying, as he is, so are we in this world. He says, act like, live like, choose like, love like Jesus acted, chose, loved, and moved. And so when we see these stories of Jesus, how can we find ourselves, not as the person who Jesus comes along and fixes their health, but how can we find ourselves as Jesus, and who can we be Jesus to and for and towards in our life? And so for these 9 weeks, we're just looking at nine different aspects of who Jesus was, and nine different times, nine different stories, and finding ourselves as Jesus in that story. So we're going to be in John chapter 16, verse 16 through 22 today. And this is a passage where Jesus is preparing his people, his best friends and followers, his closest friends and followers, for him to leave. So after Jesus leaves, how should they live? You know, once Elvis has left the building, how do you live? How do you leave? Once Jesus is no longer around. And so in chapter 15, Jesus is telling them how to grow. Like, once I'm gone, this is how you grow. And then and later on in that chapter, he tells them, all right, if people don't like you, if they mistreat you, this is how you respond. Then in chapter 16, he's like, all right, this is the word. This is how you interact with the Holy Spirit. And then later, the last half of 16 is where we'll kind of rest for the day. And then 17, he's like, after I'm gone, this is how you should pray. And so what he's doing is he's systematically over and over and over again preparing his closest friends and followers for life after he is gone. Like, all right, once I'm gone, this is how you should live in all these different ways. And in verse 16, he's doing that. He said, this is how you deal with grief. This is how you deal with loss, with mourning, with things that are painful, that you don't want to deal with. This is how you deal with those things. This is how you handle them. This is how you process them. And we'll start in verse 16. He says in John chapter 16, verse 16, in a little while, you won't see me anymore. But a little while after that, you will see me again. And I imagine that his followers looked at him and they didn't know what he was talking about. So they like squinted his eyes and like looked like there was like really a moving thing he said. Like, we won't see you, but then we will see you. wow, Jesus, so deep. By the way, when I get that face from you guys, I know what I'm looking at. Like, I know it's not going well up here, so I, you know. When I'm getting the, I'm like, yeah, okay, I know. Let me back up and let me, no, I'm kidding. And so this is, he's like, so in a little while, you won't see me anymore. But a little while after that, you will see me again. Some of the disciples asked each other, what does he mean when he says, they're like, do you know what he means? No, you don't either. Okay, let's just act like we know what he's talking about. Okay, Jesus, good job. That's wow. It's so deep and profound, Jesus. My life has changed. In a little while, you won't see me again, but then you'll see me, and I am going to the Father. And what does he mean by a little while? We don't understand. And they kind of like never did. They never got this. They never understood. Also, what you see here is what Jesus is doing, what is a very common teaching technique for rabbis, which is to talk about multiple things at once, but to speak about them in terms of principles. Like a principle is something that is consistent and true no matter what across all. And so he's giving them a principle here. How do you handle grief and how does it turn to joy? And so he's giving this a principle. Like, all right, there's this thing coming, but this is a larger principle of how it applies to all of us. Jesus realized they wanted to ask him about it. So he said, are you asking yourselves what I meant? No. Yes. I said in a little while, you won't see me. But a little while after that, you will see me again. See, what he right here, like, is he talking about later on when he dies on the cross, like, and he goes away for 3 days and comes back? Or maybe he's talking about, like, later on, he's going to ascend into heaven. They won't see him again, but then maybe he'll come back at some point to earth. Or maybe he's talking to us right now, like in moments in our life when we're experiencing grief and we don't see how God is moving. We don't see how God is interacting with us. We don't see how this all works out for our good. And so we're like, man, I don't see you in this, God. Like, what's happening? Why did you allow this? Why is this painful thing happening? Why did this person leave me? Why did this person judge me? Why did this person hate me? I don't really see you in this. And I think, is it this? I think it's D, kind of all of the above. Like, he's addressing all of these things. He goes in verse 20, I tell you the truth. You will weep and mourn over what is going to happen to me, but the world will rejoice. You will grieve, but your grief will suddenly turn to wonderful joy. See, he doesn't say that you will have grief over what happens, and then after a while, your grief will get better, and they'll go away, and then now that your grief is gone, joy will happen. No, no, that's not what he says. He says your grief will turn to joy. The exact thing that causes you grief, the exact thing that causes you pain and frustration and hurt, can be turned around and be experienced as joy. It's not this ends and then this starts. It's this becomes this. We'll keep reading. He says, you will grieve, but your grief will suddenly turn to wonderful joy. It will be like a woman suffering the pains of labor. When her child is born, her anguish gives way to joy because she has brought a new baby into the world. So you have sorrow. Okay, so right here, so he compares this to a woman giving birth to a child. And like, I've never given birth to a child. I've been around when it's happened a couple times. But, you know, I've been around a lot of people. You know, I'm in the people business. You know, I talk to people all the time. I'm in people's lives all the time. I get to see people in their greatest and worst moments of their human experience. And so I've talked to people quite a bit about, you know, the birth of children and all of that. And, I've never seen someone like plan a family and then they get pregnant and they do like the gender reveal party and they blow like pink smoke into the air or whatever that is, or pink icing or whatever that people do, you know, these days. And then they go through and they get the little updates every day. Oh my goodness, little Johnny is the size of a kumquat. How exciting, you know? The apps never told you that your child was the size of a watermelon, but ours came out the size of a watermelon, so I don't know. We missed that, the big children, 10-pound children. But anyway, and so they go through this experience, and you have the little app and the little update, and then you go through the pain of childbirth, and the doctor catches the baby and wipes the baby off and puts the baby on the mom's chest, and I've never heard a mom be like, overrated. Nah. You put this back. right? That's never happened, right? But what you do have is you have people who go through this thing, and it's frustrating, and it's hard, and yes, it's joyful, but there's like, you know, it's painful, and you're tired, and in the actual giving birth, the actual labor, which he addresses here, it's painful. And then immediately that exact same thing that is sorrow and grief and pain turns to joy. And I've been told that you kind of forget. You're just like, I can't even remember that because I'm just so overtaken by joy at this moment. And that's the nature of all relationships, right? Like that's the nature of I can speak to, that's the nature of being a parent, right? Every step along the way, every time they take a step, they transition, they grow, they're more independent. It is grievous and it's a source of joy. It's like, oh my goodness, like I can't believe that this little, they were like this and now they're doing this thing. I remember when my daughter Harper, who's over here, her first day, she went to kindergarten and I'm nervous and my wife is nervous and she's getting on the bus and we're a little bit of trepidation and she couldn't be happier. And she like, you know, skips up the steps and she turns in the bus window and she's like waving and I'm trying not to cry. And you're just like, it's like, it is this grief, but it becomes joy. Because, oh my goodness, like this little one is self-assured and strong enough that I got this. No worries. The thing is, like, that's the nature of relationship. It's the nature of families. It's the nature of people. That oftentimes, that which is our greatest grief becomes our greatest joy. No, I can't think of a better way of communicating that than a scene from one of my favorite movies. And this is a movie that I've watched I don't know how many times. And when I watch it, my wife's like, are you watching that movie again? And I'm like, no, yes, right? And I it's this movie that I get misty like 12 times watching it. And it's a movie called Father of the Bride. You guys ever seen this movie? Well, you're gonna see the clip where his daughter tells her parents that she's engaged. And I want you to watch their faces, but specifically pay attention to Steve Martin's face as you watch this 2-minute clip.
I met somebody in Rome. He's an American. He's from L.A., actually, and his name's Brian McKenzie, and he's this completely wonderful, wonderful, amazing man. And, well, we started seeing each other a lot, and we fell in love. It actually happened. And we've decided to get married, which means that what? I'm engaged. I'm engaged. I'm getting married.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, my, my. Oh, so, oh, my. And that's your engagement ring, huh?
Yes, yes. We got it at a flea market outside of Rome. The guy we bought it from said it was at least 100 years old.
Wow.
So, Dad, stop it. Say something.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Dad, I met a man in Rome, and he's wonderful and brilliant, and we're getting married.
Mom, what's he doing?
George. George, what is it?
Well, this is ridiculous. You're too young to get married.
Too young? Dad, I'm 22. If I'm not mistaken, that's a year older than Mom was when you guys got married.
That is absolutely not true.
Oh, no, you're absolutely wrong.
You were this age when I married you?
No, I was younger. I was this age when she was born.
That doesn't matter. Times have changed. Your mother was mature, and 22 isn't what it used to matter. Would you turn on the air conditioner? It's hot.
Because it's this thing that, like, he is face to face with this transition in life with, in some ways, a loss of something. Like, his daughter is not going to be, you know, his daughter is going to be a daughter all the time, but she's transitioning to be this new family, and he is just can't deal with it. But by the end of the movie, if you've seen it, like, they go and they have the wedding, and he's so full of pride and so full of joy, and he just feels like he didn't lose a daughter, but he gained a son-in-law, as easy as that sounds. And it's just like this thing that was the source of greatest grief had become the source of great joy. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's saying this thing, when you have, he says, when you have presence and you have perspective on grief, it becomes joy. Let's read verse 22 together. In verse 22, it says this. It says, so you have sorrow now. And by the way, this is the verse where you know he's not just talking to those people then. He's not just talking about the cross, but he's talking to us here now today. This is the one you're like, man, he's talking about then. Is he talking about this? Is he talking about this? No, no. This is the verse when you read it, you're like, oh, he's talking to us here today now. So you have sorrow now, but I will see you again. And then you will rejoice, and no one can rob you of that joy. And there are times in our lives when we go through things, when people walk away from us, when people reject us, when we lose someone, when we are frustrated by something, when something doesn't go the way we want it to, and we can't see God. Like, where are you in this? Like, why are you allowing this? Why is this pain happening? He's like, I can't see you. You've gone away. I feel like you've gone away from me. But he says, I will see you again. You will see me again. You will see me. You will experience me again. And then when you rejoice, no one can rob you of that joy. And what's fascinating about this passage and what he's doing in this moment, I hope it's not lost on you, is that he is preparing his closest followers and friends for his death. You see that? Like, he knows it's coming. He knows the cross is coming. And he's worried about their well-being, their spiritual well-being, their emotional health, their relational health. Like, this is someone who knows what's coming, who has sat with it, who has been present with it, and has gained perspective on it so that he can help them with what they will struggle through in this experience. He gives it presence and he gives it perspective. See, what happens when we go through times like this, when we experience sorrow and we experience grief, is what we tend to do one of two things. Either, if we have this grief thing in front of us, we look everywhere else but it. Like, we're like, all right, well, there's this thing happening that I can't control, I don't like, so I'm going to work harder, or I'm going to have more fun, I'm going to avoid this feeling, I'm not going to feel this feeling, I'm going to do whatever I can, I'm just going to put my head down and ignore this. The alternative is sometimes people who experience grief, there's something in front of them, they focus on it, they live with it, it's all they can think about, it defines them, it's like it is the sum total of their existence, is their grief. And he says he gets present with it, but he gains a sense of perspective with it. It's like he has presence and perspective on his grief. And when you have that, that grief becomes joy. Because God uses it to form something in you, to transition to you to a new season, to give you a new relationship. He has something in mind for it. And so that thing that was grief, that was sorrow, it doesn't end and then grief and then joy begins. It becomes joy. This is a promise that Jesus is giving to you. It's a promise that he's giving to me. And the funny thing about joy and happiness and these things that we're talking about is it's weird to talk about in church sometimes. Like, we think we should talk about, like, I don't know, like more things that feel more spiritual, like reading the Bible or, you know, prayer. And those things are, obviously, we talk about those things. But I believe that joy and happiness are spiritual disciplines. That God calls us to live lives marked by joy. And at the same time, I'm going to tell you something that I never realized until last week, and it kind of made me sad when I realized it. At no point anywhere in the Bible does the Bible record Jesus laughing. You know that? It's crazy. The Bible says he was a man acquainted with sorrow. It says that he fasted. It says that he prayed all night long. It says that he would go to feasts. It says that he would hang out with his friends. It says you can kind of like read between lines and figure out that he's kind of like telling maybe kind of sort of jokes at some point. But at no point in the Bible does it record Jesus laughing. You're like, wow, that's so weird. Like, no point did Peter tell a joke and Jesus guffawed. Like, nothing, nowhere in there. And you're like, man, like, why is that? That's so weird, right? It's because that which is most holy is often most hidden. You know, in the Old Testament, there's this place called the Holy of Holies, and just the high priest went in there one time a year because it was the most holy, so it was the most hidden. And over and over and over in Jesus' life, he would climb up a mountain or he'd go into the wilderness and he would pray and talk to his Father and have these intimate conversations with God, you know, all night long. And in the Bible, only one time records what that conversation was like. Because it was a holy moment between him and his Father. And that which is most holy is most hidden. And I believe that this, like this laughter thing, this joy thing, like living life that where our greatest grief has become joy, and we live so filled with joy, that is a spiritual discipline, and that is a holy thing. And so we don't get to see what made Jesus laugh, because those were holy moments in his life. I'll say this, though. I'll say that happiness is getting the perfect double balance on a trampoline, and joy is knowing what that is like. Happiness is the first bite into a perfect cheeseburger, and joy is not being a vegetarian. By the way, vegetarians like telling you they're a vegetarian, so I can say I like meat. It's fine. happiness is a perfect day at the beach. Joy is having an abiding love for the ocean. Happiness is eating a fried dough at a fair covered in powdered sugar. And joy is loving who God made you, skinny or otherwise. Ralph Waldo Emerson said this: if the stars should appear one night in 1,000 years, how would men believe and adore and preserve for many generations the remembrance of the city of God which had been shown? And he's saying that if the stars only showed once in 1,000 years, we would all go outside and we would like soak them in, and we would like sit outside, we'd lay out and we'd stare at the stars in amazement in that one moment, and we'd embrace it and we'd enjoy it, and we'd tell our kids who would tell their kids who would tell their kids what stars look like. They're incredible. But they don't happen every 1,000 years. They happen every night. And so what do? We don't even notice it. But if they didn't happen, they'd be the source of grief. Oh, I get to see stars in 37 years, 35 years. It would become this source of amazing joy. Because that which we lack sometimes, that's what we lose, that's what we don't have, becomes the joy. How do we be like Jesus here? Is that when we have grief, when we have sorrow, when we have loss, we give it presence. We face up to it. Say, all right, there's this thing, it's hurtful, it's painful, it's not what I want, I can't control it, but it's in my life. And when we have presence with it, we give it perspective. You say, but this thing doesn't define me. This can be used. It made me stronger. It made me experience Jesus more. It made me understand who I am more. Like, I give this thing substance. I give it presence, but then I give it perspective, and it becomes joy. My source of greatest grief can become my source of greatest joy. So step one is give it presence. Step two is give it perspective. And in verse 22, I just want to read verse 22 for you. Again, one more time. So you will have sorrow now, but I will see you again. This is Jesus speaking to you and to me. And then you will rejoice. And no one can rob you of that joy. So the thing is, what he's asking us to do is turn our grief into joy so that our life can be the roadmap back to joy for other people. Just like Jesus was able to work these people through, all right, this is going to happen, you're going to experience this, you're going to have this, it's going to be hard, but don't worry, I'll be there with you. So that when we take that same journey that Jesus is taking us on, we then can be the roadmap from grief to joy for other people. And that's how we find ourselves as Jesus in this story. So I want to do something out of the ordinary today. What I want to do is I want to begin down this journey with you. So in a moment, I'm going to give you a moment of silence. And I want you to process through and think through, what are you wrestling with? What's grieving you right now? What are you struggling with? What is causing pain? What is still in process of becoming joy and isn't joy yet? Where are you wrestling and tormented in your soul? Who has rejected you and abandoned you? And for a moment, in that moment of silence, what I want you to do is give it presence and perspective. And then we'll touch base in a few moments after that. And we'll give some more instructions then. So for the next few moments, I just want you to look at your soul, a few quiet moments between you and Jesus. What is giving you grief right now? What can you not control? What's causing pain in these few moments? So we did something different today. We backloaded our service with worship because we wanted to be able to respond in joy, to look at what's causing us grief and to respond and in this service as a church family begin to turn it to joy together. Now, you might be looking at me like, Jake, that sounds great. I don't know about you, I'm an actual human, and my grief doesn't turn around when I tell it to. And that, I would say, I know. I get it. I understand. A few days ago, I had to fly out to Oklahoma so I could give the eulogy for my niece, who passed away in her sleep. And I had to talk to my sister about that and make plans. And I talked to my sister, like, 5 minutes after she walked back into the house, after she got back from the mortuary to pick out caskets and flowers, and then 5 minutes later, I'm on the phone with her. So I get grief. I get loss. And so then I flew out to Oklahoma, and I gave this eulogy for this beautiful young lady, and just, she was 20. She had a bad reaction to medication, and she is mentally handicapped, and so she could speak, but not lots of words. But man, did she dance. Whenever there was music playing, she would dance with reckless abandon. And I'll tell you now what I told them then at the eulogy. See, Tammy is still dancing today. I believe that. She can just tell you why now. And that moment, that exchange, that was grief becoming joy for me. That realization was grief becoming joy for my sister, for the people there. Because your greatest grief can become your greatest source of joy. So what we're going to do now is we're going to respond in this, in the elements, and this is grief becoming joy. We're going to respond, and we're going to move past grief. We're going to turn our grief into joy. And we're going to we've backloaded worship this today, and we're going to have just a joy-filled time together as a church family, turning our grief into joy.